Welcome to Venture Rep, where the future is female. Join us as we delve into conversations with founders, funders, and financial experts, discovering solutions for creating greater opportunity, gender equity, and wealth for women. Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Nix Gerson, host of the Venture Rep podcast. Today, we welcome to the podcast Jill Faherty Lloyd, a financial advisor with UBS with decades of experience in the financial services industry. Jill is dedicated to helping women build meaningful wealth and enhance their agency. She does this by using goals-based financial planning, sustainable investing, philanthropic planning, pre-transaction planning, and financial education. Jill collaborates with her clients to help them build their individual roadmap to achieve their goals. Welcome, Jill. I'm so delighted that you're here today talking with me on the Venture F podcast. It's so good to see you.
It's wonderful to be here, Laura. Thank you so much.
So I was just sharing a little bit about you, but I would love for you to expand on that and tell us a little bit more about your practice and your area of expertise. And honestly, I'm really curious about what brought you into wealth advising and what you love about it.
Oh, it's been a journey, I have to say. I started my career back in the late 80s at Bear Stearns on the trading floor, where I was one of two women and 250 guys. It was not a particularly pretty time and place for women to work in finance. And then I became a managing director by the time I was 30. I was really kicking butt at the firm, and it was a wonderful place to be. I ended up getting hired away by a client, moving into asset management, and then helped run a hedge fund for a while. And then something miraculous happened. I had a daughter and decided that I knew I couldn't be the type of employee or working in the finance industry as a woman and be the type of mother that I wanted to be. So I personally made the decision that I wanted to leave. And I ended up starting my own business. I grew it to $1 million in revenues within 3 years and sold it. And then I went on to run a foundation for about 8 years. And when my daughter, who I left the business for, said to me, "I want to go to boarding school," I was like, "What?" Then I decided that I was going to go back to work. And it coincided with me reading a fascinating book around the Great Wealth Transfer. And it was the first time, this was back in 2015, that I saw and understood the fact that women were going to own the vast majority of wealth in our country. And I was like, I know what it is that I want to do. I want to go back to this, but I want to come back and I want to work with people rather than institutions. And I want to have real purpose behind my work. So I created business plans and I took it to all the major banks. And I just said, I would love to come in and build this women's wealth practice for you. This is the biggest growth opportunity in wealth management that they've seen. This is an unprecedented wealth transfer. And one by one, each bank looked at me and said, "That is so sweet. Yeah, no, we don't do it like that. But you'll be great. Why don't you go sit with Tom, Dick, and Harry, and you can be the token female on the desk."
Oh, you were ahead of your time.
Well, and I was like, you know what? That's just not enough to get me out of bed in the morning. You know, I had been a purpose-driven person most of my life. So I ended up convincing an RIA at another firm to hire me, and I built out their women's wealth practice. And about 3.5 years ago, I got a call from a recruiter for UBS saying, "Oh my God, finding you is like finding a unicorn. What do you want to come work with us?" And to UBS's credit, they got the memo that women were going to have all the money. And they started doing some very powerful proprietary research of their existing client base to understand why women may or may not be engaging in their family wealth or their own personal wealth. Mm-hmm. And the understanding was incredible. So those insights and the fact that there are so many great women at this firm in positions of power with P&Ls, I was like, I need to go to UBS. So I joined here, it'll be 3 years in August. And you know, right now, my book of business is split down the middle. Half of my business is mother and daughter run family offices. And these are sort of next generation women who are highly educated, highly motivated, and see the world in a different way than their dads and their granddads did. So they're like, "Thanks, Dad, I'll take it from here." And they're shifting their portfolios from traditional investments to have more of a sustainability and gender lens. They're very focused on venture. And then the other half of my business is working very closely with female entrepreneurs and helping them grow their businesses and getting them to successful exits so that they can establish their own family offices and be investing with sustainability and gender lenses. So, because in my experience, when money is in the hands of women, they do very, very different things with it. They have different priorities than men.
Let's go back to the big wealth transfer comment, because that's something we talk about a lot here. And like I just said a minute ago, you were ahead of your time. How are you prepping your clients for this big wealth transfer? What are you doing? How are you working with your clients on this?
Every client, every woman is at a different place in her journey. Some women have been raised to not talk about money. So that's the first step, is to talk about it. Other women have been raised being manipulated by it and don't trust it. Other women have had an open tap and haven't really thought about the bad things that can happen in their lives, right? So it's really meeting women where they are. But I would say the very first thing that is critical is to understand and be clear about what your values are. Know who and what is important to you. And our team, when we meet with a client, we have a really fulsome discovery process. We sit down for 90 minutes and ask the craziest questions. We have like 100 questions that we ask so that we can really understand what that person is all about, how much they need to support their lifestyle today, how much they're going to need to live this very long life that women have, right? We know that women live longer than men. And then what mark do you want to leave on this earth? And there's a lot of questions that you have to ask to understand what motivates somebody to actually want to lean into caring about their finances and then facilitating the money to do what it is that they want to see happen in the world.
And there's a lot we want to see happen in the world. And so planning for that and thinking through it is so important. The other part of your practice is also helping founders who are preparing for exit. And this is something we're talking about so often in these rooms that you and I are in. We see women who have built these incredible companies, multi-million dollar companies. They're getting ready for that next change, for that next opportunity. But before they sell the company, sell a percentage of the company, consider IPO, anything that's going to be a great capital infusion for them upon exit, you got to prepare. So tell me about that.
That's the key, right? We're actually doing some research right now to back up what we're seeing anecdotally. But what I hear from venture capitalists is that their portfolio company operators who do personal planning in advance of an exit end up making more money for themselves and their investors. And why is that? It's because most founders, for them, this is transformational wealth, right? There are a few billionaire women that I know who have started their own businesses who have exits. But for most of my clients, this is like big money. And you know, as they're running their businesses, there are going to be times when they're going to want to quit. It is really, really hard to be a founder. I give so much credit to these women who are out there trying to raise money and put out fires, right? And there are going to be times when then they want to quit. But what I'm growing to understand is the ones who have actually sat down and said, I'm really clear on what my number is. This is the number that I want to make from this business. They stay longer. And so it's encouraging founders. This is the thing, right? Like, women want to be prepared for everything. We don't apply for the job until we have 10 of the 10 criteria. Men apply when they only have 6. We've seen that research, right? And we know that women are doing everything, not just running their businesses, but they're running their households. I mean, it is so much to take on as a woman, particularly as a female founder. But if you can find yourself a partner, a thought partner, who can help you take this off your plate and present you with data and facts and take your options and build out models and show you how you can get to that number, it's like a breath of fresh air. What I've heard from my clients is knowing that they're not doing this alone. And what often happens for founders is they are so overwhelmed, they don't know who to go to help them with this, that they wait until after they've sold their business to find a financial advisor to assist them. And that is too late for them to do any tax mitigation. So if there's anything that comes out of this, in this conversation with us today, is encouraging founders who have significant wealth in their businesses to find a really great financial advisor that meets them where they are, that takes this off their plate and can help them see the future of their life and their legacy. After all, why are you doing all this? Why are you working so hard? There's got to be a reason. And that gets back to this discovery process that my team and I do, is to really understand what motivates you. Why are you doing this? Who matters to you? What matters to you? Okay, let's build a plan for you while you're working and running your business based on the input that we've had. And we'll deliver that plan to you like you're a CEO and you make those decisions. So we're going to talk about this later, but wealth management is not rocket science. Wealth managers should be delivering to you a mirror of what it is that you want to see your life become and the people you want to influence and how you can help them. So please tell your founders they got to do the planning at least 12 to 24 months in advance of an exit.
That is sound advice. And I've heard that in the room in a number of places, and especially from you repeatedly through our conversations. And I'm so glad you're reiterating that. It's super important. Founders are so good at building their teams for their companies, but sometimes we forget we also need the team for thinking about personally for our futures and what's going to happen next.
And because we can be so stuck in the mess and all the noise and all the stuff that's coming at us 24/7, putting out fires. I mean, that's human nature, right? If you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, it's about surviving. And we neglect that future you. And so the whole role of this pre-exit planning is to focus on future you and what you want that to look like.
I want to talk about the investing piece of it and why it's important for women to invest. And also, why do you think women are such great investors? You touched on that earlier.
Yeah, it's important that women invest, first of all, because women live longer than men, on average 5 years. And wives, on average, outlive their husbands 15 years due to the divorce rate, right? So 9 out of 10 women are going to be solely responsible for managing their own wealth at some point in their life. And the worst time to learn how to do that is when you're grieving. So it's important to start taking steps to understand what your finances look like, whether you're in a happy marriage, whether you're a young woman, whether you're running your business and you've outsourced to somebody else, you have to have a working knowledge of your finances. And also, you know, we've got the pesky wage gap, I like to say. So women have earned less over their lifetime. We've taken more breaks over our work lifetime to care for children and parents. And therefore, we tend to have lower 401ks. So it's really important for women to start investing if they want to bridge the gap, right? We don't just have a wage gap, we have an investment gap. And being educated on how to invest wisely and not just in cash and not just in treasuries, but to understand what the importance of being in the equity market is and the compounding interest, the magic of compounding interest, and what that can mean to your outcome later in life. So that's why it's important to invest. Women are really good investors. UBS does some spectacular research, which I mentioned earlier. And in one of our recent reports called Women and Investing, what we found is that women spend more time researching. They're more likely to follow a plan. So if you create a plan for them, they've hired you to do the plan, they're following the plan. They're less likely to try to time the market. They know they're not hedge fund managers. And they don't panic when the market goes down because they have a plan in place, right? And so because of that, we're seeing the performance is better than men. They also tend to be a little more focused on risk management and they're not winging it. So they're the best clients because they are smart. They want to become smarter. They know what they don't know, as opposed to rolling the dice and hoping that everything works out. Women are more likely to invest with a sustainability lens, and their confidence goes way up when they have made investments that are having a positive impact on society.
And part of focus, too, when you're talking about that impact on society, is thinking about alternative assets as well. If you're looking at other asset classes, there's so many options out there. Like, what are you advising your clients?
Yeah, that's a great question. But there's no shortage of opportunities and investments. But let's take a step back. There are no shortage of problems in the world that venture-backed companies can address. And female founders are particularly good at experiencing a pain point in their lives, seeing the white space, and then going after it. I'm sure you've covered this with many, many of your guests on this show, is that we know that 85% of purchases are done by women, right? So we know what we want and what's not on the market. And I'm not saying that all venture-backed businesses are consumer products, because they're not. There's some incredible fintech founders, women's health, which is so important to me. As you know, I'm a breast cancer survivor. So the more that can go into women's health, I'm 100% behind that, because we all feel that pain point, right?
Aren't the statistics that we're 52% of the population? So honestly, women's health should be health.
Yeah.
It is that important.
So there are so many issues that female entrepreneurs are addressing, and love to see them get more capital. From my perspective in this seat as a wealth manager, you have to make sure before you invest in alternative assets that you have secured your own mask. There's three ways that I would look at this is you need to make sure that you have enough money to support your expenses for the next 3 years. We didn't talk about this earlier, but I think this is a great place to turn it into the place for alternatives. You want to make sure that you'd have enough money to cover 3 years of expenses in very low risk assets. Then you need to have the ballast of your portfolio in equities and fixed income that will grow during your lifetime. And many times it's good to see equities and fixed income generating income so that you can put it back into that first cash bucket, because you're going to be spending that. And then the last bucket I would say is a legacy bucket, right? That's the money that you don't need to buy food, pay for your healthcare. You don't need it to support your lifetime, but that's really your mark on this earth that I want to leave, right? So that could be seen as, I want to leave money for my kids, and that's risk on, or I want to make a big difference in the world. So I'm going to invest in alternatives with a gender lens, for example. So the wealth manager in me is like, let's make sure that you've secured your own mask and your children, and then let's think about the alternatives side of things. Yeah. And then if you go into alternatives, it's very, very important to have a diversified portfolio of funds, of vintages, and of different types of assets, whether it's venture or whether it's credit or whether it's private equity, whether it's real estate. But focusing on venture is, I know, your sweet spot, and that's an area of the capital stack that I adore. And I've met so many incredible women, again, who are solving this no shortage of problems that the earth has.
Female founders, changing the world. It's such an incredible opportunity. You touched on this a little while ago when we started talking about investing, is the UBS report on women in investing that came out. And one of the many things that I love about UBS is the extensive research your company does in your annual reports. This year's Own Your Worth, which I think we were just talking about, you know, when you're planning for the future and you're thinking about investing, put your mask on, which is knowing your own worth, like putting yourself first. In the Own Your Worth report this year, you guys focused on primary breadwinners and the challenges that women face when it comes to growing their wealth. What are some of the challenges, and how are you working with your clients to overcome them?
This report was so powerful. This Own Your Worth report, the team from UBS who ran it spoke to 800 high earning women and men in heterosexual couples. So I want to just clarify that this is couples. And we found that only half of the breadwinning women, so these are the women who make the most money in their families, were very engaged in short and long-term financial decisions, compared to 75% of men breadwinners. That's a data point. Secondly, this lack of engagement has the potential to put women's hard-won earnings and future financial security at risk. So the question is, if money is power, why aren't women breadwinners exercising it? And the research at UBS uncovered three themes. tradition, trust, and time. From a tradition standpoint, traditional gender roles, they've heightened women's ambivalence about being the primary breadwinner. We found that 49% of women prefer being the breadwinner versus 87% of men prefer being the primary breadwinner, right? That may not surprise you. From a trust perspective, women are contending with trust issues from their partners. So in our research, we found that the men who were the non-primary bread earners were more likely to worry about their spouse's spending habits and hold their spouses back from spending money. And they worry about her investing habits. So that to me was really interesting.
That is really interesting.
Yeah. Mm. And then the last
non-primary earner is concerned about it. This is so interesting.
And is trying to control that, right? There's issues around that. So we can just put a pin in that and have that be a coffee conversation another day. And then the last bit is time. And we touched on this earlier. Women breadwinners spend more time on household responsibilities than male breadwinners. And we know that's everything from childcare and laundry to cooking to the school play, right?
Right.
So women breadwinners feel less supported by the financial services industry as well. This is a real eye-opener for our industry. They feel that these three things are really important. They feel it's been patronizing to women. 64% of the breadwinners said that, women breadwinners. They feel that it caters more to men. 63% think it caters more to men. And 57% assume that the spouse, the non-primary spouse, the male, is the primary breadwinner. That's just the default. So it gets back to what we were talking about earlier, which is, you got to meet these women where they are,
mm-hmm.
right? And you got to see who they are and what they're accomplishing and how busy they are in their lives. And then you need to work with them and deliver information to them in a way that works for them. Because if you're asking them to do a ton of work on all of this, it's just not going to be possible. A financial advisor needs to be the solution, not the one who puts all the work on the client's plate or makes them feel like they're not important enough or that they're just ancillary in the room.
So, and how are you solving for that as a wealth advisor?
Well, you know me. Female first. You know, I would say tradition and trust, those are social and familial issues. And that's just going to have to play out over decades, I'm afraid. But from a financial services standpoint, we need more women advisors. Right now, only 15% of financial advisors are women. Only 15%. This is such an incredible career because you can have flexibility to have children. Like if I only knew this back when I started on Wall Street in 88, I probably wouldn't have needed to take as much time off to raise my daughter as I felt. So we need more financial advisors, and we need advisors who seek to understand their clients or women in general, to set their assumptions aside, to simplify the time burden of the engagement of working with an advisor, and to address financial engagement through a comprehensive and goals-based approach so you can really see the big picture. Again, I get back to it. This is not rocket science. It's about what you care about, who you care about, and future you. So how can we ensure that picture of the future can come true for you?
Well, and along those lines, I think I read in the UBS research that 61% of women retire earlier than planned.
Oh my God.
So why do you think that is?
Well, the research unveiled two reasons. One is a lot of women retire to keep their older spouse's company. But then this is the thing that gets back to women's health is menopause. Is like women, top reason that women leave their jobs is health related. And again, menopause is a period where many women are forced to reduce their employment or take times off. There was a study in 2022 by the Fawcett Society in the UK. 1 in 10 women left a job directly due to menopause symptoms. Let's get more money and funding support for women to get through, which is a challenging health period in their lives.
Absolutely. And also on that note, you know, women live longer than men. So you would think we need more earning years. Don't we need to plan for that, for the fact that we're probably outliving most of our spouses?
Yeah. And it gets back to that, what I was saying earlier, if we were to look at three buckets, a woman needs, they need their money to last a longer lifetime. They're going to live longer than men, right? So know your number. What is the number that you need? And we can do some simple math here. Let's just take, if you have a $10 million portfolio and you've stopped working, right? If that gets a 6% return and then you pay taxes and fees, it's $400,000 a year. Can you live on $400,000 a year? Cut that in half. Can you live on $200,000 a year? Double it. Can you live on $800,000 a year? That's a general rule of thumb. Again, I want to talk about these buckets, right? So you need three buckets. You've got your liquidity bucket, which is the working capital you need for the next 3 years to support running your household and your healthcare and all of that. Then you've got your lifetime bucket. This has to live with you for your very long lifetime. And these assets need to grow with you, and they'll replenish the liquidity bucket every year. And then the mark on the earth bucket. That's the legacy bucket. And that is where the venture goes. That's where the higher risk and the less liquid investments can be placed.
You know, and a big reason why we do this podcast is because I know you talk to women every day. I talk to women every day who a lot of what we're talking about seems ominous. You know, it can seem foreign because we don't talk about money enough. We're not having these conversations often enough or frequently enough or feeling comfortable enough to talk about these things. How do we shift this? How do we build women's financial competence? What do we do?
I would just say, as women, we do really hard things every day, right? Many of us have had children. We have worked in industries that have not welcomed us. We have built incredible industries, and we've been mothers and teachers and sisters. So I would just say that this is not rocket science and you can do it. Secondly, I would say it starts with talking about money, destigmatizing it, and thinking about money as power and freedom. That is in your reach if you want it. And that's really the big question. Do you want to be in charge of your life? I work with the women who have agency or who want more agency in this situation. And I coach them. Three more points. I would understand your number, right? Like I said, is it 10 million? Is it 5 million? Is it 40 million? You tell me, and work with a really good financial advisor who sees you and who can build a comprehensive financial plan that takes into consideration your values, your lifestyle, and your legacy goals. I would say take part. If you have a financial advisor, you need to start going to the annual meetings. You need to be on the phone call. You need to be on the quarterly meetings with the financial advisor. And you share with them your desire to learn more. The industry is adapting to women as wealth stewards. And if you're not getting what you need from your current advisor, you need to find another one.
Absolutely. You should be working with somebody that you're aligned with, who is listening to you and is really helping you plan as a team. You're a team. That's why you're working together.
It's really fun work. I love what I do. I wake up every day and I'm so excited because the women that I'm working with are really making powerful change in the world. And it's very, very purpose-driven.
Well, I love what you do too, which is why I was so happy that you could come here today and share it with all of us. And I know everybody listening is going to be really curious to know more about you and how you work with people as a wealth advisor and about UBS. All of that information and links to the appropriate places will be on the episode recap on VentureF.com. Jill, it's always tremendous to spend time with you. I learn so much in every conversation, and I really appreciate you sharing your expertise and your knowledge here at VentureF today.
Oh, Laura, I love what you're doing here. Money and knowledge are power. Because when wealth is in the hands of women, they do very, very different things with it. And I love that you're driving this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to VentureF today. To discover and listen to other podcast episodes and sign up for our weekly newsletter, visit us at VentureF.com or follow us on Instagram at VentureF Podcast. New episodes of VentureF are out every Friday.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.